It's Sound Effect on KPLU. I'm Gabriel Spitzer, and here are the sounds of the week's top stories.
We've heard from the community that they were not given an opportunity to try to step forward and purchase the station for a community-based group. And so now what we want to do is try to give them the opportunity to do that.
Most of those workers have precarious employment with virtually no rights in the workplace.
It's not some kind of magic, pixie dust that we're going to spread around the world and solve climate change. What it has done, I believe, is it should give us confidence that when we act to defeat climate change, when we act to reduce carbon pollution, we won't be acting alone.
So, it's been quite a news week around these parts, with news that KPLU supporters might get a chance to buy the station. Add to that collective bargaining for ride app and taxi drivers, and our local officials returning full of fervor from the Paris climate talks. But of course, there's a lot more in the news that doesn't necessarily get the attention it deserves. So here now, with some analysis of the week's underreported stories, are Nina Shapiro, reporter for the Seattle Times, Josh Veit, co-founder of Publicola and politics editor for Seattle Met Magazine, and Rachel Lerman, also of the Seattle Times. Welcome, everybody, to our, well, what is probably our final news panel on Sound Effect.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
I'm going to explain that more in a little bit, so stay tuned. We'll just build suspense around that. But for now, let's start with underreported stories. Nina Shapiro, what's your story this week?
So do you remember the last presidential election when Mitt Romney lost by a wide margin and the Republicans went into this crazy soul-searching about what went wrong? So they figured out that a big part of why he lost was that Romney couldn't get much of the Latino vote, in part because of his famous comment that undocumented immigrants should self-deport. So after this round of soul searching, they decided they were going to do something about that, and they were going to send a lot of money to the states in order to do outreach among Latino voters.
And this is sort of driven by long-term trends, right? They sort of realized that we can't just win with white voters in 10 years, 15 years, 20 years.
Yeah, exactly. Obviously, the demographic of the country is changing. Latinos are becoming a bigger and bigger part of the population. And there are some good reasons why Latinos might support Republican candidates. There's a lot of social conservatism in the Latino community. And so Republicans wanted to seize upon that. So there was money coming to the states. In 2013, I did a story about this, and I interviewed the chair of a local Republican party who said they were just waiting for the money to come and they were going to start doing outreach here. Meanwhile, there were some other attempts to bridge the divide, and there was a very interesting coalition that the nonprofit One America helped build. One America is a advocacy agency for immigrants, and it had actually gotten a lot of Republicans on board to something called the Washington Compact, which was an agreement about immigration reform. And so there were several very high-profile Republicans who joined in on that effort, including Chris Vance, who's now running for Senate, and a couple of former state Republican Party chairs. So fast forward to today. This week, we had yet another Republican presidential debate. All the candidates are outdoing each other about how hardline they can get. Whatever happened to that outreach effort? I don't see much about that at all. And I'm really curious, is it still happening? Have people just given up?
Or are they so distracted trying to attack each other on every little minutia of their maybe differences in policy that they've forgotten about everything else?
Yeah, it's a good question. And the interesting thing about this year's election, or rather next year's election, is that there are actually two Latino candidates in the race.
That's right.
One of whom is the has one of the hardest lines on immigration, Ted Cruz. And the other was supportive of immigration reform, Rubio, but then has had to back away from that and
totally
so has been
away.
Yeah, and so has been busy saying that he doesn't support what he used to support.
I was going to address that the local level. I think the Republicans were on board, and in fact, last legislative session, at the top of the session, the Republicans commandeered the DREAM Act.
Yes,
and,
very much
and,
so.
That's right. And they tweaked it a little to make it their own. They changed the
in
name
in the House.
In both.
To the Senate as well.
I think the lead came from the Senate. The Senate Republicans. it was a state senator, Republican state senator, okay. I forget her name, but she took over the issue,
okay.
and
yeah.
they changed it a little bit to right. bring in veterans okay. and took over the issue. However, mm-hmm. the other pressing issue with the legislature is the Voting Rights Act for immigration issues and Latino mm-hmm. issues mm-hmm. And outreach to Latinos, based basically because of Yakima, and you know there is 41% of the city is Latina, but they'd never had a city council member, so they
right.
there was a move, legislation that two Republicans from Yakima backed, mm-hmm. but the rest of the chamber didn't. They haven't been able to pass the act, and now you see they were forced by a lawsuit to go to districts in Yakima.
Right, mm-hmm, it took a lawsuit, mm-hmm. yes,
yeah.
and we've talked about
but
here.
But I guess my point being, there was initially some support to try and reach out, particularly on the DREAM Act.
Yeah, I'm betting that a lot of local Republicans are really frustrated.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's just no space for them to sort of make headway on this right now in this kind of political atmosphere, probably.
Exactly, and Latinos are never going to support candidates who talk about building a wall. It's just not going to happen.
All right, well, wither efforts for Republicans to woo Latino voters here in the Northwest and elsewhere. That's Nina's underreported story. Thanks for that, Nina. And now, Josh, let's move on to you. What's your story this week?
Sure. It's been 4 months now since the state Supreme Court held the legislature in contempt, held the state in contempt for not funding education at $100,000 a day. So we're at about $12 million in fines.
Starting to be real money.
Yeah. And basically, the underreported news is that Inslee has been holding, there's a task force from two members from each party from each house, meet with the governor, and they're trying to iron this out in advance of the session. They met this week, nothing. They left shrugging shoulders, no deal. They agreed to meet again on January 4th. And we're at this impasse. Basically, we need about another, there's a lot of different numbers, but another $3 to $5 billion estimated for teacher compensation is missing from McCleary. The other aspect that McCleary demands, the court ruling demands, is that local jurisdictions can't be held responsible for funding education, and that's currently at about $1 to $2 billion a year from local levies. So we're heading into the session in contempt with something like $4 to $5 to $6 billion outstanding. What are they going to do? The Democrats are still talking about capital gains taxes. The Republicans are still relying on the levy swap, that is taking the property tax and moving it away from local levies and bringing it to the state. That creates winners and losers that, frankly, districts like Seattle aren't comfortable with, because we'd be spending more than we currently spend and getting less back, which is the problem of blue-red Washington in a lot of ways. So it seems to me the Republicans are basically saying, we funded it, we're not interested. And the reason I say that is their focus is on charter schools right now. Mm-hmm. So the court basically held the charter schools legislation that was passed by voters in 2012 unconstitutional, or said it wasn't legal because you can't use public money to fund private or charter schools, basically. And there is a legislative fix, and the Republicans have said, Republican education leaders, Chad Magendaz has said, hey, look, we're not going to do anything on McCleary until you guys tweak this charter legislation. So that's where they are, basically just saying whatever to the court.
Wow. And so there's no roadmap to getting this corrected at this point.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, again, that's what these meetings with the governor and this task force has been, and they haven't come out with a plan.
And Josh, how close are we to an agreement on charter schools? Are the Democrats likely to do a fix? Or?
That is a great question. A small number of Democrats have signed on. Eric Pettigrew from Southeast Seattle is one of the big supporter of it. Some other people have come on board. I think maybe like 10 to 12 Democrats have come on board. And it is, you know, it's only one vote difference in the House these days, and the Republicans do control the Senate. So that's maybe all they need. Whether or not they get this tit-for-tat deal and whether or not the Republicans need it, I don't know. But I haven't heard a lot. I have called Republicans and have not heard the specifics on what the fix is. I've been trying to get – is it simply just saying – changing the law and saying we can fund charter schools with public money? I don't know exactly what the fix is.
Yeah, and now that the legal appeals have, I think, run out the string completely,
right?
It seems
like
the emphasis will shift completely to a legislative fix. If for the proponents anyway.
That's right.
You know, I have to say I was asking about this question when I was doing a little bit of reporting on this earlier about the amount of money that was ratcheting up.
Yeah.
And I remember getting an answer like, you know what, that's kind of chump change compared with what they have to spend anyway. So I think there are some people who view that penalty as more symbolic.
Yeah. And your colleague Jim has done some reporting. Jim Bruner has done some reporting, I think, that shows that the money's being put into an education fund anyway or something. So it's not, we're not actually cutting checks.
So no one's ever actually going to pay that. It's just going to be like pushed forward into whatever deal maybe eventually gets struck.
I think they are going to pay it, but I think the question is, how much of a threat is that really? Because they know they have to come up with that money anyway.
Yeah.
So is that really something that's hanging over their heads and that they're really panicking about?
But it sure sounds bad. And voters,
it does
voters
sound bad.
That.
Yeah.
I mean,
it does
the answer to find them more, you know, like if this isn't working, like $10 million like, what else do you do to put, right? What else do you do to put pressure
well,
on them?
And of course, the Republicans have made the case, you know, they say the court cannot do budget writing. And so the Republicans aren't really taking the contempt order seriously. They're saying this is the court has overstepped their bounds.
Yeah. Which they've been saying anyway about charters and yes.
Well, thank you for reminding us of this story, Josh. We're definitely going to be hearing more about that going forward. And now let's wrap it up with you, Rachel Lerman. What's your underreported story?
So my underreported story is about unfounded rapes, especially in our local area. There was this beautiful, amazing story that came out this week by the Marshall Project and ProPublica that looked at this serial rapist who was committing attacks in Washington State and then in Colorado. The first attack that we know of was in Washington State in 2008 of this young woman who was then basically coerced by the Linwood Police Department to admit, I say in large quotation marks, that she was lying. Mm-hmm. And it turns out, you know, they found out 2.5 years later that she was not lying. There was a serial rapist. She had been raped. He had raped other women in Washington and in Colorado. And this story looks at how the detectives caught him, but it also looks at how police investigate rape crimes and how they have the tendency to convince victims that they didn't in fact get attacked. If the victim might have a couple inconsistencies in their case, then they try to convince them that, no, in fact, you're remembering that wrong. And there was an independent report that was done on the Linwood Police Department that found that they had something like 4 or 5 times the national average of these unfounded rape cases.
They claimed,
right. Mm-hmm. Which turned out to be, of course, at least in this one case, not unfounded.
A suspiciously high number, yeah.
Suspiciously high number. And as we know, most rape cases that are found to be unfounded are not actually unfounded. What this report is basically saying is that the Linwood Police Department, and I'm sure many other police departments, are convincing victims to admit that they were lying when in fact they were telling the truth. They're being bullied into saying that they lied about a rape when in fact they did not. And so this story takes a look at how we investigate rape cases. And the Linwood Police Department has since said that they've completely redone the way that they do that. They give their officers training on how to talk to rape victims. But it's a huge issue. And this story is so beautifully done and hits so close to home right here in our local area.
It's beautiful and gut-wrenching, I have to say.
It was a beautiful, beautiful story. And what it reminded me of, actually, was a related issue, which is the prevalence of false confessions. So I think the bullying culture that you talk about is prevalent not just among rape cases. So it goes into how the police officers said to this young woman, threatened her, said she might lose her housing, threatened her with jail if she didn't admit to making it up. And I think there's that kind of pressure that's brought to bear all the time in interrogations, which is why we now know that a lot of people who are convicted based on their own confessions are actually innocent.
Especially when you look at the psychology of victims, right? Like in this young woman's case, obviously you would think she's traumatized. This has just happened. She's probably never been interrogated by the police before. They're saying they're going to take away her housing. They're going to take away her chance of a job. They're going to take away her support system if she doesn't admit to lying. And then you're so traumatized that what do? Do you create false memories for yourself? Like if you have these authority figures trying to pressure you out of saying something.
And in this case, she was actually charged with making a false report taken to court.
Another unusual thing. Usually people that admit to false confessions, whether that's true or not, are just kind of let go, released from the system. We don't really hear about it again. She was actually charged for basically wasting the police officer's time.
Well, thank you so much for bringing that to the table, Rachel. It's absolutely worth reading that story. We'll link to it on our website. The place to go is kplusoundeffect.org. And speaking of sound effect, I want to make clear, this show is not going anywhere. The panel is probably going somewhere. This probably will be the last time you're going to hear the News Roundtable during Sound Effect. We're excited to start bringing you the full hour of stories on our theme in the new year. And our underreported stories may make a comeback on KPLU at some point, so stay tuned for that. But I'm so grateful to all of our panelists who, over the course of the year, have helped catch us up on stories that may not make splashy headlines, but definitely enrich all of us. And not the least of whom is our final panel, Nina Shapiro, reporter for the Seattle Times, Josh Veit, co-founder of Publicola and politics editor of Seattle Met Magazine, and Rachel Lerman, also of the Seattle Times. Thank you all so much for coming back on the show.